You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
Gamma Ray welcomes MSSV with Hot Probs and the Mothballs on Thursday, April 17th at 8 p.m. MSSV, guitarist Mike Baghetta, drummer Stephen Hodges, and master bassist Mike Watt create a hybrid of punk power trio and dreamy experimental rock. Mr. Watt offers the best-known pedigree, he of Minutemen and Firehose fame, but Hodges has worked with Tom Waits and David Lynch, and Baghetta has played with Psychic Temple, Jeff Coffin, Henry Kaiser, and the Reverend Fred Lane. The trio's music is full of memorable hooks and noir-tinged adventure, with vocals from all three. MSSV's third full-length record comes out this spring, and this show offers local support from heavy hitters Hot Probs and the Mothballs. More information at gammaray.bar. The Gamma Ray welcomes MSSV, Mike Baghetta, Stephen Hodges, and Mike Watt, with Hot Probs and the Mothballs, Thursday, April 17th at 8 p.m. This ain't no picnic. This is WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
It's the Perpetual Notion Machine, edition March 27th, 2025. Thanks for joining us in this half hour of evening science news. My name is Dee Crouch, and I'm joined here in the studio by Tanner Johnson of Beyond the Breakers podcast. Hey, Tanner, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Now, for all of our listeners, Beyond the Breakers is a fantastic podcast about historical shipwrecks and other maritime incidents on the Great Lakes and elsewhere in the world. You not only tell us about the incidents themselves, but you also teach us about the context in which they occur, how they happened, where they happened, who and what was involved, and the outcomes of these incidents that can be costly in a number of ways. So, Tanner, my first question I'd like to ask is about the recording that begins each episode. Here's the clip. That is a sobering transmission between Captain Bernie Cooper of the Anderson reporting to the Coast Guard that the Edmund Fitzgerald is no longer on radar. Would you be able to tell us how you came across that clip and why did you choose it to open your show?
Sure. That clip is one that sort of immediately my co-host slash brother Taylor, he's always been the shipwreck guy. Far more than I have been. And the Edmund Fitzgerald has always been one of his, big fascinations, and kind of settled on using that clip as the intro because it sort of embodies a lot of the stuff we talk about. You have this radio chatter between captains, between the Coast Guard, and they're looking for a vessel that, to them has maybe just disappeared momentarily. They don't quite know what's happened. They don't know that they are discussing a historic shipwreck in the making. That's from a much longer piece of radio chatter. And if you listen to all of that, you can really hear how almost mundane the conversation is because they don't, they don't know what the gravity of the situation will be. So I think it is an appropriate way to start the show.
Absolutely. And for those of you who aren't aware, the Edmund Fitzgerald is quite well known in Great Lakes history. Would you say probably mostly because of the Gordon Lightfoot song, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. And I can say, at least from my experience, and I think this is the experience that a lot of people share, being a kid growing up near the Great Lakes, that's like kind of the first time you really start to realize what they are as powerful forces that create their own weather systems, and even entities that shape our culture as well. So when the Fitzgerald went down, that was about 1975, right? Mm-hmm. So this will be the 50th anniversary of it coming up. But yeah, so that transmission is I think a really good fit for the podcast. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry for the dead air. Okay. So have shipwrecks always been an interest for you guys? You mentioned that your brother was a bit more into them initially. How did you feel about that? How did that come to be?
So, I mean, for him, very much the song, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, was sort of a gateway into that. You know, he talks about hearing it, you know, in the car with our dad for the first time, and just, it's a very haunting song. It really captures you. Just becoming really interested in it. I remember, you know, as kids, whenever we were in a bookstore, he was always, you know, getting a book about shipwrecks. And for me, like, that's not something that ever really got my attention, you know, until, you know, COVID era, everyone's starting to get into their little projects while they're stuck at home. And he had the idea of, we could do a podcast about shipwrecks. And, you know, I was excited to do any, you know, sort of project, really. It's fun to keep in closer touch with him. And for me, really, at the beginning, I kind of realized how expansive that topic could be. It didn't just have to be, you know, an ore freighter sinking on the Great Lakes. You know, there are infinite stories, infinite reasons that a ship could sink, you know, different contexts historically. And so really the show has kind of just become a vector for talking about history through the sea or through a specific wreck. And that's something I really enjoy. You know, I've always been interested in history, and being able to do a project like this and do that research, you know, every now 2 weeks we're putting out main episodes. But it really is, it's very enriching to see the various different ways that ships have affected human history, even not if it's something that you might directly think of as a shipwreck.
Absolutely. Yeah. To drive the point home more, your podcast covers more than shipwrecks. Incidents range from all over the world as well. Some other waterways incidents that you've covered include the near tragedy of the Pan Am Flight 6, which was an unfortunate tragedy for the poor Canaries.
Mm-hmm.
Offshore drilling platform disasters. The recovery of a sunken Confederate U-boat, of all things, which is a sentence that, you know, I never expected to say. How do you go about finding these topics to cover?
I guess this does sort of connect back with my previous answer, but it tends to just align with whatever Taylor and I are interested in at the time. You know, whatever we happen to be reading, there's almost always a way you can wrangle in a maritime or a shipwreck theme, whatever it may be. You know, I will find myself interested in a random topic and realize that, oh, there's something I can do with this. You know, when we covered the... When we did a series last season about the Battle of Lepanto in 1471, and that's right in my wheelhouse that I'm interested in, that period of history, and we spun that off into a bonus series about the Siege of Malta. And that really all just came out of the fact that Taylor and I were both reading a lot about the Ottoman Empire at the time, which, again, doesn't immediately trigger shipwreck in your head, but there's ways we can do that. And so I think expanding out the topics that we really cover has been really good for the podcast. Your classic shipwrecks are interesting, but there's only, you know, they do get old. They do become kind of routine, and kind of seeing what we can do and how we can stretch the, you know, the definition of maritime disaster or shipwreck has been a really fun part of the podcast. So really, yeah, the short answer is whatever we happen to be interested at the time, one episode might spin off into another one. If there's some extra element that we don't really have time to cover, that's a big part of it. That's typically how we do our bonus episodes. We did a bonus episode off of our Torrey Canyon series where we talked about a sister ship of hers called the Sansanena that blew up in the port of Los Angeles. And again, that was, I never would have covered that wreck probably if we hadn't covered the Torrey Canyon.
Hmm. And the bonus episodes go up on your Patreon, right?
Correct. We have two tiers of Patreon, and we put out, it's typically two bonus episodes a month. One of them is usually something like a movie. We just did a bonus episode about the film Under Siege, featuring the great Steven Seagal. And then our $5 bonus episodes are typically a bit more involved, a bit more research laden. We just recorded one of those the other day about a particular slaving vessel between Brazil and Africa, and its sort of role in the legal and then the illegal slave trade. So obviously a much heavier topic, but the bonus episodes are kind of a way to expand things out even further. We typically don't even cover a wreck per se in those.
I see. So if you had to choose, what have been the most intriguing incidents that you've covered? Feel free to pick more than one. It's time for Shipwreck Propaganda.
I spent a lot of time thinking about this question and making some notes here. And I guess first off, there's different reasons that one will grab my attention or really hit hard. And I think the hardest hitting episodes are the smaller, essentially unknown ones that we cover. You know, we've covered a few that are, you know, shipping or rather fishing vessels that maybe have six or seven people on board. You know, despite the fact that that's something that might grab a headline, it's not going to be discussed a lot. It's not going to have documentaries made about it. You know, there's not going to be songs written about some of these things. And we've talked about a few fishing vessels, you know, up in Alaska, you know, very, very rough area to be a fisherman. And those stories tend to hit a little bit harder because you tend to, you know, you know the names of everyone on board. You might know a little bit of their personal history. Whereas, you know, when you cover a big ship like the Lusitania, there's so much stuff to cover, and it's really impossible to grasp all of those stories on an individual level. So in terms of specific wrecks, one I was just thinking of today for a Wisconsin connection, we did this last season. We covered the ship, the Phoenix. Anyone who's ever been to the Maritime Museum in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, has probably seen a painting of the Phoenix. She caught fire just off of Sheboygan it was 1847. And she was carrying mostly Dutch immigrants coming to settle in Wisconsin. And that's, you know, there's a lot of artifacts that were recovered from that wreck. You know, there's a big Bible that they have on display that survived the wreck. That one, there were a lot of personal stories that came up in that one. People who survived, remembering the wreck, and just sort of putting that in the context of American history. You know, this is this big wave of immigration. And, you know, for some of these people, they land and they start this new life, and some of them never get a chance to do that. On a similar vein, we covered an Irish coffin ship called the Edmund. You know, she was loaded up with people who were fleeing the Great Hunger in Ireland in the 1840s, and she barely makes it off the coast. And for me, that was one that hit really hard because, again, you have people loading up their whole lives to hopefully get something new, and that is cut short because of this wreck. Those are two of, I think, for me, that were the most impactful. And if I can just add in one more.
Absolutely.
One of the earliest episodes we did, and we need to redo it because the audio quality is not great on that episode. So I'm a teacher. I work with international students, and many of my students come from Korea. And one of our very early episodes was on the sinking of the Sewol ferry, which was has been covered quite a bit. We recently did a bonus episode that looked at a longitudinal psychological study of the parents who lost children in the Sewol sinking. And that one for me as a teacher, these were students who were near the end of their high school careers. This was essentially, you know, a graduation present for them, being able to take this ferry to Jeju Island. And a lot of them never made it back. So it's definitely one of the hardest hitting stories. That's one of the only episodes where I've had to have Taylor read something that I wasn't able to read just because, you know, I couldn't get through it. So yeah, I think overall that's probably the one that has affected me the most that we've done.
Heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad you're there to tell people about it. So do you think you'll ever run out of shipwrecks to bring to the podcast?
That was my question for Taylor when he suggested it. I was like, oh, so what is there, like 50, 60 shipwrecks that are worth covering? And no, there's, I mean, in terms of especially because you can take the same wreck multiple different ways. Some that even ones that we have covered in depth, we could easily revisit. I mean, the Lusitania, we did five, including the bonus about that. There's plenty of stuff you could go back and talk about with that. We're never going to cover the Titanic. Not going to happen. But no, short answer is no. We're not going to run out, especially with the somewhat expanded idea of, you know, what constitutes a shipwreck. You know, as you mentioned, if you put in things like oil drilling platforms, those have plenty of, you know, their own issues. So, expanding the scope out and especially expanding it through history. You know, if you're thinking of shipwrecks as something that happens in, you know, like the 16 to the 1800s, the age of sail, that is going to limit it somewhat. But there's plenty of things you can do. One of my favorite episodes that we did was about the White Ship disaster in England in the year 1100, I want to say. The furthest back we've gone in history so far. But yeah, there's so much you can do. You know, as I mentioned, I think in the first episode of the show, humans have been dying in shipwrecks for so long that you're not really going to run out of topics.
Absolutely. And unfortunately.
Yes, have to mention that. It is a bad thing, even though that is what our podcast is about. It is not good.
I assure you, they treat it with the weight it deserves. Let's see. Oh, this half hour is flying by. It's already 7:16. I am speaking with Tanner Johnson of Beyond the Breakers, an engaging and informative podcast about maritime disasters on the Great Lakes and around the world. So in order to host these sometimes hour-plus episodes, Tanner, you've had to have knowledge about a myriad of different historical contexts, such as different kinds of vessels, seaways, political and social factors, even contemporary laws and practices. How much preparation do you need to get ready for a show?
Definitely several hours at minimum. I mean, there's obviously a range. If it is something that is a more technical episode where we are working directly from, you know, an NTSB report, an MAIB report, a Coast Guard report, those episodes tend to be a bit more streamlined in the process because we're focused on kind of the nuts and bolts work that has already been done, and sort of hopefully repackaging it in a way that is a bit easier to listen to. But yeah, there's certainly some, especially if it's a topic that's newer to me, or if it's a topic that just seems very, very big. You know, when we did our episode on the Spanish Armada, my first instinct was we should just do an episode on the shipwrecks themselves. You know, after the Spanish Armada's famous defeat, that wasn't the end of the story for them. They still had to get home, sailing up around Ireland, and many of them didn't make it back. And there's tons of those wrecks scattered on the Irish coast. And that was my original plan, was just to do one episode on that. And it kept on expanding. I can't talk about this if I don't explain this. I can't cover this if we don't know who this person is. So it expanded into four episodes ultimately. It's definitely an extensive part. That's one reason that we've gone to just doing every other week with the main episodes, just because we both work full time. You know, Taylor has three kids. So we did kind of tone it down a little bit. We were working at a pretty frenetic pace the first few seasons. But just to keep the show, to keep the quality of the show high, we wanted to make sure that we were able to put in that sort of requisite amount of time.
One of the things that I really like about the show is that it never goes into something that feels like exploitation. Like, here's all of these people and let's have fun hearing about how their lives ended. How do you navigate the border between exploitation and information?
It's an interesting question that we do wrestle with. Sometimes we sort of refer to it as that sort of true crime trap you can fall into where you do feel like you're exploiting something. Whether it's for laughs or otherwise, just for the fact that you're making content from it. And I somewhat try to keep in mind of, okay, would I want someone affected by this wreck listening to this? Would this be a good memorial to someone who was lost on one of these wrecks? That's something that kind of guides it. And then I think just keeping the focus on, you know, making a professional academic sounding project. And that sort of covers a lot of those things where, you know, we don't typically get into a lot of the gruesome details. You know, there's many horrendous ways to die in a maritime accident. And unless they're directly relevant to the structure of the episode, we don't typically harp on them too much. But it is something we're definitely conscious of. You know, the fact that we do, you know, produce content, and some of that is, you know, premium content on Patreon. And, you know, these are something to keep in mind that, like, you know, this is a very heavy topic. You know, these were tragic events. But I think also keeping the focus on drawing something from it. You know, one of the sort of motto of the show is shipwrecks, loss, and lessons learned from maritime disasters. And I think keeping the emphasis on that, not even necessarily a lesson about ships. You know, I'm not a mariner. I've been on a boat once in the last 20 years, probably. That's not necessarily the lessons I'm drawing from this, but there are lessons to be had about things like leadership. We talk a lot about things like crew resource management, and you see a lot of those things play out. Decision making, teamwork is another factor here. So there's a lot of positives to draw out of these, some silver linings on those clouds. And in some of these really horrific events, you do see a lot of the best parts of humanity come out as well. You see a lot of heroism and bravery that might not have a venue in some other context. So, yeah, I think trying to keep the focus positive rather on the, you know, the icky, nasty, awful ways you can die in a shipwreck.
Yeah, absolutely. When you were talking about the positive aspects, the first thing that came to mind was Pan Am Flight 6, when mm-hmm. you guys were talking about how well, like, the crew and the captain had all worked to make sure that no human lives were lost. And, like, the stewardess, I believe, that you mm-hmm. were talking about had brought the pillows to put mm-hmm. in front of the passengers and, like, had remembered before hearing about accidents in the water where the tail of the plane got shredded, and mm-hmm. so they brought the people up. That's just amazing to hear about, and it's kind of nice, you know, in the middle of your day when, you know, you need a little pick-me-up to hear about.
Yeah, Taylor covered a wreck called the Oceanos, a big cruise ship, and in that one, the crew, I mean, essentially, you know, delegates their duty and doesn't end up doing much to help the rescue, and so in the absence of the crew, you have passengers who step up and do that, who are getting people to these, you know, evacuation helicopters and stuff. So yes, you do see a lot of those great parts of humanity come out too.
Hmm. Does research become more difficult with shipwrecks or vessels that are known more publicly, that already have more intrigue around them? Or is it hard? I guess that's a weird question to ask because I know you're a podcast that likes to stick to, like, the reports and, mm-hmm. you know, the facts of the matter. And you guys are really good with saying, like, this is a theory or, mm-hmm. like, you know. Do you ever find that there's, I put in quotes, too much information out there with some wrecks?
For sure. And I would say with the bigger wrecks, you definitely feel a bit more pressured. You feel like there's a pre-existing audience for this wreck. You know, if I harp too much on the wrong theory about why the Lusitania blew up like she did, then, you know, XYZ people are going to come for us in the DMs. there is a bit of that, but I think also with a lot of those really big wrecks, as you said, there is so much documentation. So I always feel safer, you know, as a researcher, as long as I have someone who is smarter and more expert than me that I can sort of rely on and say, okay, this is according to this person, according to this person, it does make it a lot easier. With the smaller wrecks, I would say there is a different kind of pressure, and it's a pressure to really get it right, because this might be the only media that has covered this, you know, outside of the incident report. You know, we've had people contact us and say, oh, like, you know, I had a, you know, my uncle, my cousin was on this and I enjoyed listening to the episode. And that's obviously kind of one of those big relief things, because it's like we at least did it some sort of justice. So I try to keep that in mind. You know, we just did a episode on a Russian oil drilling platform called the Kolskaya. And there's a lot written about it in Russian, but there's very little written about it in English. And so that was one, it kind of treads that line, you know, in this sphere of the world that it mostly concerns, people are aware of it. But outside of that, it is something new that you're hopefully putting into an English-speaking sphere. And that's another part that I really enjoy, is taking something that maybe doesn't have a lot of coverage outside of, you know, it's the country, the place that it happened in. That's really how I felt about doing the Jola ferry sinking in Senegal. This is an enormous shipwreck. It's, I want to say it's the third deadliest peacetime maritime accident, and very few people have heard of it. You know, it is, it's such a catastrophe for the nation that it happens in, and really outside of Senegal and certainly outside of the areas immediately surrounding it, it's almost unknown, I would say, in the English-speaking world.
So the next question is a question that I would like to get into the habit of asking anybody who does research, which obviously includes you. Are there any resources you ever wish that you had that would help your research? Do you ever find things are kind of blocked off behind paywalls, or?
I mean, that is one thing that I do definitely feel privileged, is that I have access through work to university databases, which has been infinitely helpful. You know, having access just to something like JSTOR has been a huge advantage, which obviously not everyone has easy access to. That's something that has been pretty indispensable. I would say in addition to that, though, a maybe slightly more accessible resource is newspaper archives. That's something that has been, for certain episodes, being able to, sometimes it isn't just about getting the facts, you know, that have been published in hindsight. Sometimes it is about getting what were people saying about this when it happened. You know, what was the headline the next day when this steamboat exploded? So that's another resource that I think is really valuable as a researcher, is just having access to something as mundane as newspapers. And that's that database, those databases is something I've used a lot.
Are there any recs or events you'd like to cover in the future, or any future projects you'd like to talk about?
We do have an April Fool's episode coming up on April 1st. Maybe not the best intro to the podcast, but you know, if you like what you hear, we'll be putting that out. Some projects. I mean, I'm always looking a bit more into the past. Taylor, you know, being much more interested in the more modern shipwrecks. You know, Taylor, if you listen to his episodes that he researches, a lot of them are about, you know, the world wars, stuff in the 20th century. I tend to drift a bit further into the past. So there's a lot of historical wrecks that I'd really like to cover. At some point, definitely are going to cover the Swedish vessel, the Vasa. You know, there's some battles I'd like to squeeze in there, and, you know, plead with Taylor and say, can we please count this as a maritime disaster? But yeah, there's plenty of projects kicking around. We don't tend to plan them out too far in advance. But yeah, definitely have plenty of ammunition there.
Well, Tanner, it's been great talking to you. Thank you for coming out and joining us all the way from Appleton. We'll be looking forward to future episodes of Beyond the Breakers. You've been listening to the Perpetual Notion Machine on WORT 89.9 FM. I'm Dee Crouch, and my guest tonight has been Tanner Johnson of Beyond the Breakers. Our engineer has been Dan MacArthur. Thank you, Dan. Up next is Radio Literature with your host, Melvin Hinton. And to close us out, we have Tom Castle's rendition of The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Good night.
Legend lives on from the Chippewa on down, or the big lake they call Gitchigumi. A lake it is said never gives up her dead, when the skies in November come gloomy. Where the Lord of Arnor 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. The good ship and crew was a bone to be chewed, when the gales in November come relief. Ship was the pride, the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. So big freighters go, it was bigger than most, where the crew and the captain was seasoned. Put in some terms with a couple of steel firms, they left fully loaded for Cleveland. And later that night when the ship's bell rang, could it be the north wind they've been feeling? Thank you.
Midwest Jazz Collective presents the Benny Banach III Quartet for two shows at 7 and 9 p.m. on Monday, April 7th at Cafe Coda. Emmy-nominated trumpeter and singer Benny Banach III has proven to be that rarest of talents. Not only a fiery trumpet player with a stirring command of the post-bop trumpet vernacular, but also a singer with a sly, mature, naturally expressive delivery in the post-Sinatra mold. Third in a generational line of Pittsburgh jazz notables, Benny follows in the footsteps of his trumpeter and bandleader grandfather, Benny Banach Sr., and his father, Benny Banach Jr., who gave the young Benny his first professional experience. Benny's group includes Tyler Henderson on piano, Caleb Tabachman on bass, and Joe Perry on drums. More information at cafecoda.club. Midwest Jazz Collective presents the Benny Banach III Quartet for two shows at 7 and 9 p.m. on Monday, April 7th at Cafe Coda. You are listening to WORT Madison.
Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Radio Literature. Here we are again. Let's see. Tonight we're going